At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Tonight, we're going to be breaking down the 2024 election results. And I do got to say, a lot of W's, I think, in the last night. Overall sense of W. There is like one major category of L's, which I guess we're going to talk about as well. But for the most part, I'm pretty optimistic. There is a sense that, hey, we got a reprieve. And I think there is something that we can start a movement that lasts way longer than the next 4 years. And I don't know. I'm pretty excited about the days ahead. I've been working on a lot of personal things within my house that has kind of like made the election results from the other night like really coincide, which we'll also get into tonight. And overall, I thought it was a pretty good election results for the most part for us. I realize that there's, major issues that were not victorious, but we needed a win here and we got the win. So I see you got the MAGA hat on, which I didn't know you had a MAGA hat.
No. It's funny. I had it by my desk the entire time. Ironically, it was sitting on top of Birch and DeJuvenal's On Power. So that's just the irony of that versus, whereas I have like John Calvin and Stephen Wolf on my right, Birch and DeJuvenal's on my left. So yeah, again, I'm excited about the results from Tuesday. Yeah, there are some downsides and we're kind of seeing a couple other downsides and I guess the fallout in the world's slowest ballot counting process in certain states, but overall,
which states would that be?
One would be Arizona. Obviously, there's some
Maryland needs to be talked about more for how embarrassing Maryland's election process is. So this is what I recall, and this is from the 2022 primaries. So, where I live, because it's not really where you live anymore, we had a very contentious state delegate race, and it came down. There's three chairs and 8 monkeys and 3 bananas. It was that contentious. So what ultimately happened was it came down to the mail-in ballots, but Maryland does not count the mail-in ballots on election night. Instead, they wait until Thursday. So the election's on a Tuesday. They wait until Thursday to begin counting them, and they might not even finish counting them on this Thursday. And so it'll wait until the next Thursday to continue counting them. That's when I believe that they continue counting the mail-in ballots. They will take an entire week off after already taking a day off after finishing their work on Tuesday night rather early.
Yeah, I know.
And then they'll count the provisional ballots, I think, another week after that. I think that's how elections work in Maryland. I could be wrong about that, but I know by law they are not allowed to count the mail-in ballots on election night or the day after. That's why you saw the Maryland results come in today.
Yeah, it is.
And it looks
ridiculous.
Pretty bad for Neil Parrott. And yeah, the MD6.
That disappointed me.
Yeah, I mean, he was up in the polls too.
And then you just saw it slowly creep from like 3,000 ahead to like 300 ahead. And then, Montgomery County was like 66% reported or something ridiculous.
Yeah, because Maryland, there's a huge embrace of mail-in ballots. So that being said, those were the preliminary results. I kind of went over the big picture 270 to win on the last video I did. I had the election pegged pretty accurately, 312 to, what is it, 226 is what Kamala is going to end up getting. So I had that part, accurate. I nailed that, but that was not the bold part of the prediction. I literally just went with the polling averages. And I mean, thought that Trump would overperform the polling averages, but I didn't think that Minnesota and New Hampshire, which would have been the next two states to fall, in my opinion, were going to flip. I mean, so it was a pretty safe election result.
Yeah, 312 was what people would ask me, and I would say, and they would say, what's going to happen in the election? I said I would answer 312. That's what's going to happen. Trump 312. And again, a lot of people are a little thrown off by that because, you know, they don't realize I'm talking about the Electoral College and what exactly that means. Because
people are thrown off by that?
Yeah, a little bit. Because I would be like 312. Europeans? No, Americans. I guess they didn't realize that if he swept all seven swing states, that would be 312. So yeah, I'd answer that. That would be my answer. Now, I talked to some Virginia people and, you know, they were very optimistic about what would happen there. But I mean, as soon as Arlington started reporting, that was it.
I got someone in the chat waiting to get on. Are you able to get on? I don't know if you can hear me or not. But anyway, we'll see. This is somewhat of a call-in show for patrons and other guests that I've invited on. So that being said, you can, if you are a patron and want to join evangelicaldarkweb.org/greenroom, or you can go to the link to the live stream announcement on the site. That's one of the most recent articles published, so you can find it. I believe in you. And you can join the stream as well. So here's what I'm my read. So I had that part right, and then the bolder prediction that I had was that we would know the results on election night. I would consider, you know, prior to 2 o'clock in the morning still election night, because I'm still up at that time on every other day. Yeah, so
that was a rough day. I was burning like 22 hours.
22 hours?
Oh, yeah, I
get up in the early for, yeah, on those days. So someone in the chat just asked, your name's Anthony, my name's Ray. There we go. I sleep in late, and maybe I get up at 10 o'clock in the morning certain days. I got up at 10 o'clock today, which was kind of early for me. But anyway, so that was my result. I mean, was anything shocking about the 270 for Trump? Anything shocking about that at all? Like, was there a state that you thought he would get that you're surprised he didn't get?
I mean, I might have been a little bit more shocked about Virginia, and just, you know, that Arlington was, as soon as Arlington started reporting, that's when it flipped in Kamala's direction after how the night was going so far. But once you see that even Virginia was incredibly competitive, that was kind of a nice little bellwether of how the rest of the evening was going to go.
So Georgia, I chalk up to the election integrity laws that they passed. I think that plays a major role. And that's also why we knew the results rather quickly. I also get the sense that, you know, Pennsylvania was a little tougher, but I do think Trump campaigned well in Pennsylvania specifically. I mean, Republicans tend to do the best where they devote their funds to, you know, when they actually devote their funds to a cause that's worthy. I mean, obviously, Larry Hogan getting a bunch of money and then getting schlacked by 17 points. You love to see that. But he got a lot of money that could have gone to Hung Cao out in Virginia, and maybe he could have outperformed Trump.
I mean, Hung Cao, I mean, he should not hang up his cleats yet. He should run for governor, because Winsome Sears ain't going to win. You know, Mark Robinson did awful. And I don't know if that's his porno scandal or if he's just uniquely bad when the spotlight's a lot brighter.
I don't know. I think people were moral cowards with that one, but I would have still voted for Mark Robinson.
But I would have too, but at the end of the day, I don't think he did not run a good campaign. And I don't think base black is a strategy for the right going forward.
It doesn't normally work. I mean, you had the one dude that they kept running in Michigan, I think.
Well, he wasn't based.
And no, he was not based. He turned out not to be very based at all. But nonetheless, it doesn't always help. And then people are trying to float Byron Donalds as a much more base figure than he was when he was willing to go Black Lives Matter and struggle session Ron DeSantis and agree with Kamala Harris on the whole curriculum thing. So that being said, It'll be interesting to see the new crop of politicians that arises out of 2024 in the election. And hopefully it's much better than what we're used to. So that being said, let's move on, because I'm not really shocked by any of the results. I kind of predicted it.
I mean, like, I think I saw the Florida line was like 8 or like 7.5%
victory. He won by 14, right?
Yes. So he overperformed in Florida by a lot.
They should have had a spread on Florida.
Well, that was the spread. It was like 7-8. And he beyond overperformed. So that was another shock.
Yeah, I mean, I think he overperformed all over the place. I thought that Kamala Harris would underperform, because at the end of the day, who are the people that are going to be motivated to vote for a diversity hire? I just don't see that happening. But to her credit, she did perform in line with Barack Obama. Take that for what you will. So there's a lot of interesting polling results that come out. A lot has been made about the religious vote. I actually wanted to play a part about, and this is going to lead us into the whole John Piper discussion that I want to have. There's this clip from Blaze that I want to show, and it's from their election stream, which is 9 hours, but you know, we got the appropriate timestamp for the occasion. And this is where they talk about the breakdown of religions and who voted what way and how much. And I just find this discussion interesting, because they kind of scold Christians and they scold Protestants and Catholics, but you know, watch who they give the praise to.
That's a profound statement.
That's a little more than he said, but right spirit.
That's how you interpret it. I know what you mean. Yeah. Going back to the religion thing for a second, the number of Catholic voters, and we should talk about the number of Jewish voters that are breaking for Trump too, because we're starting to get data about that. But there's two comments I would make about Catholic voters. First of all, your comments on social justice are correct, but it's like any Marxist redefinition of a word. Catholic social justice is putting the dignity of every human life first. Right. But then the infiltrators came in and they redefined it and tricked Catholics and the Catholic Church. And this is a criticism that they well deserve, did not do a good job catechizing young people for decades. So they were very vulnerable to falling prey to the redefinition.
You also had the Marxists down in South America.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course.
Deeply
that's what
going
I mean. When
into
I say
the
infiltrators, yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. But we also, what's interesting is going through the Black Lives Matter riots or going through COVID, what happened to our young men in this country? We had a spate of suicides like we've never seen before. We had a mental health crisis. And these young men who might have been ostensibly Christian, maybe they were raised in a Protestant household, turned to churches that actually then told them, you need to get a vaccine, you need to mask, you need to support these Black Lives Matter rights. Mm-hmm. It was wokeness when they needed God.
Yes.
And so what did they do? They started searching for the truth, and they found, under the layer of politics that can sometimes obscure the Catholic Church, they found truth in the theology. And those voters, those young men specifically, are the ones I think we will find are what changed Catholic votes.
For anybody who's...
So I want to pause right there. Your reaction at the idea that the trad cath, the young trad cats are... you know, changing the Catholic trajectory and the voting. Because historically, the person, if you win the Catholic vote, gives you a very good chance of winning the overall election. Bush 2000 was an exception to that.
A narrow one, but yes. My takeaway on the Catholics is the rate of Catholics increasing for Trump was primarily driven by the Hispanics, because I think they improved 8% overall.
In turnout?
In total vote from 2020.
Okay.
So I did the breakdown, and I attribute the gains with Catholics, because I think he won 58% of Catholics or something ridiculous. So I attribute that to the Hispanics, predominantly Hispanic men that teamed up with Trump on this go around. And obviously there is a lot of I think that's Liz Wheeler.
Yes.
She's referencing a lot of the young trad Catholics. So this, like, online movement of like right wing dudes that are like Catholic. So that would be what John Doyle, and maybe not Fuentes, but like similarly, a lot of these people that are like seeking out enchantment, so to speak. And they like these high church traditions because of their aesthetic, their appeal, their, I guess, formal, their ecclesial traditions. Like the people that, I guess, the trad Catholic or the Latin Mass appeals to are probably the voters she's talking about, but I see that more within the younger voters not necessarily the overall Catholic voters. So like younger men was a huge improvement with Trump.
Yeah, I think Trump did wonders.
He did 11 points better with young men. Like white that women. Zoomer age.
I mean, we're going to talk about this, but he also did pretty well with white women. But yeah, he won the Catholics. He won them pretty well compared to past elections. So that was pretty good. And we're also going to talk about the evangelicals as well in a moment here.
Who's read The Fourth Turning? I think we all have. This is the hero generation.
Yeah.
This generation, especially of young men, this is the World War II hero generation that will save us. Will save us in the end.
Can I talk about the Jewish vote for one second? Okay, this is a Fox News exit poll that shows that Donald Trump has received 43% of the Jewish vote in New York, which is the highest share for a Republican presidential candidate in decades. If you go back to 2020, not just in New York, but overall, Joe Biden won 77% of the Jewish vote. So that's a significant shift towards Donald Trump.
You buy that or you sell that?
I mean, the overall, like, I can't necessarily buy like one sample in New York when like all the exit polling I'm seeing is showing that like 78 to 80% of Jews voted Kamala, which is one of few demographics she actually improved with.
I mean, it's hilarious. Very few.
The others being gays. She actually, like, she improved with gays by like over Biden by about 10%.
How much of that do you think is, what's the way to put it? Young people now getting the right to vote that have been indoctrinated into homosexuality and other forms of sexual degeneracy. How much of that do you think is new voters?
It's hard to say because I think the overall percent was the same.
I think I saw 8% of the electorate
versus like 7. So it was like a 1% increase. I don't think it was a driving force unless, like, I don't say a lot of them, let's just say, didn't make it between 2020 and 2024.
Now, TH has a very good point here. It was us Gen Xers that led the charge in this vote. And
yes,
that is completely true.
So yeah, when I analyzed the breakdown on the age brackets, the Gen X was a driving force. That is a reliably conservative generation. And the boomers, a little bit of boomer bashing, but if you look at the math, doesn't lie. The boomers are trending liberal, and that over 65 might be more liberal because a lot of the silent generation are dying off.
Yeah, I saw the same thing in the exit polls. I do have the NBC exit polls, which I guess we can go through after we're done this part of the stream. So let's just continue. We got a few more minutes of this one because I don't buy that Fox News exit poll for a second, because that is an outlier, or that one specific area that they showcased was an outlier. It doesn't match the rest of the data that we're seeing, or the obvious fact that, you know, Jews voting for Bolshevism is just kind of like peanut butter and jelly and stuff like that.
Pretty remarkable, because it doesn't usually happen, but Jewish people too. I mean, there's a total realignment happening tonight. Steve.
One of the things I was waiting to see tonight was white evangelicals, which have been
about
the most consistent, reliable block of the GOP base for decades. And you know, every Republican that runs, Glenn, gets 78 to 85% of those.
Yes.
Okay, even Romney as a Mormon got 81% of the white evangelicals. Yeah. It's the turnout number you're looking at, all right? And so Romney's percentage was about what Trump received in his two, but his turnout was lower.
Yes.
Tonight, Trump, only 22% of the electorate are white evangelicals. That's on par with the turnout that Romney received. Trump did win 81% of them, but it's by far the smallest turnout he received.
I will tell you
so
that,
far.
You know, the president and I had a conversation, several conversations about religious people turning out, and he didn't understand the evangelical. He's like, how is this being missed?
He watered down his pro-life messaging and it offended quite a few people. I mean, a lot.
So I want to pause right there because I want to talk about what he's about to say, but let's kind of react to the turnout numbers. I think it's hard to measure. I think it's actually going to be slightly higher than 22% of the electorate, which is what Steve Dace said, because I believe that a lot of Christians embraced early voting. I think a lot of legacy Republicans embraced early voting because the Republican Party embraced early voting this time around at record rates. I don't know what the previous record would have been, But you saw in Arizona, the Republicans were like, we're going to vote early because of all the election day shenanigans that could go on. So a lot of Republicans, because of their weariness with the integrity of the elections, they're going to lock in their vote early to avoid any type of shenanigans on election day. I think it's higher than 22% because
their samples. So I don't know if that helps. Because again, obviously they do give you the percentage breakdown on what percent of people is this and that versus that. So, I mean, they think they had like whites as like 71% of the overall electorate. So I'm not quite sure whether the turnout, election day turnout, impacted that versus the early vote, whether that would be even reflected in the data.
Right. So that is something that I believe needs consideration. But yeah, I will concede that it's lower than the 28% that it was from 2020. I think that's pretty fair to make, to say, but maybe it's like a 23-24% rather than a 22%, which I think does make a huge difference.
There were certain trends that were, I want to say margin of error trends, but it's kind of like Trump loses like 1-2% with whites, but obviously he made it up more with Hispanics. So, you know, those are like margin of error trends. And his improvement with blacks was also, you know, 2% higher with black men and black women. So another little marginal change with regards to other voting blocks. So maybe it was, again, 23-24 versus, you know, 22.
I just want to catch up on some chat here. Fellow millennials and boomers failed us. Yes, as a millennial, yeah, our generation's a lot more liberal. And you know why our generation's liberal? Because statistically, our parents are technically Gen X. But most millennials were raised by boomers. And that's why Gen Z is actually more conservative, because most of Gen Z was raised by Xers. So you're going to see that compound, but a lot of the millennials, in my opinion, are probably going to start trending more conservative. But again, they're going to be more conservative than the boomer generation, I think, in the long run. But you're going to have to break these millennial or these generational cycles.
So. Yeah, I mean, there is the whole, I guess, cycle of life and the, I mean, a lot of what liberalism does is it breaks the cycle of life, so to speak. You know, the idea of getting married, like marriage is clearly a driver towards conservatism. And that's probably a reason why a lot of Gen X are holding strong with regards to conservatism and voting Trump, is because, you know, they're the people that they might have children in the household. And that's that generation. They're the ones more likely to be struggling with the tranny stuff, or they know others that are.
So this chat, there's no more, General Dove says there's no more pro-Israel politician on earth than Trump. I just think that's factually incorrect, because Mike Johnson, first of all.
Yeah, I mean, he literally
second of all, him. Trump and Netanyahu got beef.
They have beef. You can watch this on a video of how Trump shook Netanyahu's hand. He's flexing on Netanyahu. He's doing a lot of domineering practices. He brings him in for a bro hug. Like, you know, he's throwing him off his game. That's a dominance play. He's trying to dominate. And that's after he ignores him and shakes his wife's hand first. So
I honestly think Donald Trump is a noticer.
He's a Manhattan businessman. I'm sure he
he's dealt with a lot of banks. Yeah.
Yes.
And Hollywood.
He's dealt with a lot of tribes in his life.
Have you seen the change in California district map? A lot of it went red. I don't know if it was a district map or I saw the county map. Yeah.
I think I did see the district map. I'm not sure how official that is, but that does prove that Coachella rally was a good play.
Let's see. You talk like Trump is a Christian. I don't think that's factually accurate at all.
No, I would consider him more Caesarian in how he views religion as like public good.
All right, so let's get back to the. Let's talk about the evangelicals getting turned off by the abortion message.
Well, let me get back to the Trump on Israel thing, because today we had the Nick Fuentes article, because Nick Fuentes basically came back out after the election decided to start supporting Trump again. And it's like Trump is a shift in the more anti-Zionist direction, especially when you pair him with J.D. Vance, who literally goes on an interview and says that, you know, there's America's interest and then there's Israel's interest, and sometimes they're not aligned. So the fact that he expressed a dichotomy between America and Israel's interest is a shift towards a more anti-Zionist direction, but obviously they're not going to just
baby
come out
steps
and say it.
Yeah, I agree.
And the other thing is, going back to Glenn Beck talking about the fourth generations, that World War II generation, that new generation is noticing. That's the war.
That's not a Zionist generation.
Yeah, that's
and that yeah, even goes into the church. War. Obviously, you know, we're somewhat products of that. But I want to write this article. Obviously, there's no time for me to write the article on that. Christian Zionism is in a terminal state of decline. They are not winning over the next generation. So I'll write that article eventually. Probably won't do a video on it. But anyway, let's get to the
a lot of people I know. A lot of people I've worked with in pro-life circles are mad, upset. We're not going to vote for him. I've argued with him in my own private circle.
Yeah.
It's kind of confusing in that, you know, before George W. Bush had great pro-life messaging and then just funded Planned Parenthood and screwed us.
Correct.
So in this case, it's kind of the inverse, where this guy has a great pro-life record, but his messaging sucks. All right. And it confused a lot of people. Nevertheless,
but like, I can't understand. You have literally, I believe, a legitimate blood death cult on the other side.
It's something fundamental. Like, you know, it's really hard to complain about Trump's watered down pro-life messaging when you're in prison for what you believe. I mean, there's like a very fun. But the reality is what white evangelicals did tonight. And I hate to say this because this is my tribe. And you're going to be hard pressed to find someone who has spent more time organizing this group around the country than I have in the last 15 years. What they did here tonight, because you're watching Trump win a resounding victory without mass turnout from them. What they did essentially is marginalize themselves politically, and that will be felt moving forward.
Yeah,
that will absolutely be felt moving forward. And
that's
and
not necessarily good.
It's not. You had Ron DeSantis basically, as I said earlier, beat the Florida amendment, the Kill 'Em All amendment, without major pro-life organizational help. I got a text from someone who is very well connected in conservative circles. Won't mention his name. I'll tell you during the break. It's a name that we would all know. Who texted me the fundraising numbers for a lot of the major pro-life groups around the country and was like, "Where's all this money being spent? Where are all these people at?"
I know.
And so, you know, why aren't they on the ground helping us beat all these amendments in Arizona? I don't see them anywhere, he told me. So the reality is tonight is overall the you know, white evangelicals are going to have a very long conversation about who their leaders are, how they're going to proceed moving forward in the future, what their messaging is, how they want to do business politically. Tonight was not a good night for white evangelicals.
I think
no way to spin it.
I think.
All right. I don't really care about listening to Glenn Beck, but that's a clip that I wanted to show you. Your reaction to that, and then I'll give my take.
I mean, I don't. Again, let's assume that the percentage is a little bit more generous than what's being presented in the exit polling. I do think there's some truth to that. And you see this a lot with like abolitionists, and you know, there are certain never Trumpers. So there were certain camps, again, maybe they're more perennially online, that were interested in forsaking Trump because, you know,
they at least voted though.
Maybe some did, some didn't. And I can tell you when, you know, during the campaign we ran on, like, you know, one of the nastiest person I interacted with had like a Bible verse on his door. I think it was like Joshua 1:8 or something. But yeah, and he was just citing the immorality of Trump as to why, you know, he basically, you know, spat in my face. But,
you know, here, let's talk about the immorality of Trump. You know what Trump's biggest vice is? Incompetence. Incompetence. That was his biggest vice because. You know what David's greatest sin was? When he wanted to touch the ark and bring it into the temple when he wasn't supposed to, in the book of Chronicles, First Chronicles, I think first. That was his biggest sin. And that sin had such consequences that it brought the 3 days of plague that killed like 70,000 people a day or something like that. That was David's greatest sin.
I thought that was the...
That's when he wanted to move the temple or
but
oh wait. Yeah, okay.
The moving of the ark just had a bunch of people die.
Right. Yeah, oh yeah, they just got smote. They got smote on the spot. Sorry, the census, which is actually around that time, right? That was like his greatest sin because it was an affront to God. It was directly a sin against God, and it was it wasn't actually the sin against against Uriah. But, you know, that was the sin he got the whole nation punished for. because it brought 3 days of plague. So similarly, I think that's how you would attribute Donald Trump. Now, I said that was Donald Trump's greatest character flaw. And to be fair, he's shown a lot of competence lately.
Well, I mean, just look at
him. Kamala Harris is his opponent. You can't honestly tell me that she is a better character than Donald Trump.
Let's go back even further. I mean, George Bush started two wars, and one was entirely on false pretext, and that basically destroyed Christianity in Iraq.
I'm not even sure which one you're talking about. Oh, you're talking about Iraq.
Entirely.
Afghanistan's also on the false pretense that the Taliban did 9/11.
Even, again, plotting a terrorist attack from a cave pre-internet in the Middle East. Yeah,
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So I think they're both on false pretense. And yeah, we didn't need to invade and overthrow a government in Afghanistan to combat Al-Qaeda. That's just... And then, you know, during the Obama administration, we're arming Al-Qaeda in Syria.
So I mean,
Riddle me that.
But I mean, we're going to judge character of like just presidents in my lifetime. Yeah, Trump probably has the best character. And again, I mean,
Clinton?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit more comparable.
Yeah, Epstein Island, Bill Clinton, George Bush.
Barry? Has Barry got better character than Trump? I mean, so again, if you're actually looking at the people.
Barack Obama, a lot of gay dudes in Chicago suspiciously died in December of 2007.
And then his chef.
And then Mitt Romney, obviously flip-flopper, gave the country gay marriage. John McCain, dude divorced his wife for a younger model, who I believe was married. He married rich in doing so, was a liar.
I mean, Biden's like an alleged pedo.
Biden showers with his daughters. Yes.
As far as people that actually held the office, I mean, his character is probably above average as far as just in the last like 30 years.
I mean, they're not all Richard Nixon's. There, I said it. And you know what Richard Nixon was?
Yeah.
No, a Quaker. And I wonder if that's why Futurama would always have him like, when he speaks and gets all worked up. I don't know if Richard Nixon actually spoke like that or whether that's them making fun of Quakers. But, you know, and you know what Quakers are, you know, often called? And they're supposedly a string of Anabaptists. And here's the thing about Anabaptists, right? You have the splinters that the more extreme sects of Anabaptism, which would be the Amish, the Mennonites, I guess Quakers would kind of be in that vein as well. Like they're Anabaptists, but they're more on the extreme end of Anabaptism. But your normal everyday Anabaptist is more like John Piper. That is the Anabaptism that really is predominant in the church. So when Steve Dace is talking about we need to have a long conversation about who the leaders in the church are, John Piper's poster child for the problem here. In 2020, he was soothsaying. He was, you know, saying, hey, you can vote for Democrat. It's okay. This isn't a sin issue or whatever, Christian liberty. So he's trying to soothe the consciences of people that are objectively voting for evil.
Well,
do that.
I do think there's the flip side because I think a lot of Christians might have more of a libertarian bent as well. So, you know, this is how you get, I think a lot of like, honestly, like the abolitionist types that might have like more of a libertarian bent where everything has to be like perfect or it's sinful or it's impure. So that, sort of mentality in libertarian circles.
There is an ironic sense of post-millennialists believe that things will get better, that the church will be victorious. And yet oftentimes it's a lot of post-millennial people that purity spiral about candidates. It's kind of difficult to work with. You got a lot of premillennialists, and again, Anabaptist, the original Anabaptists were premillennialist, who thought that they could usher in the return of Christ. They failed to usher in the return of Christ. So they said, if we can't, you know, govern and bring back the will of Christ, you know, bring the return of Christ here on earth, none of y'all can do anything. And that's kind of been the pervasive mentality. And that's why a lot of Anabaptists oppose Christian nationalism. And you saw the one dude join the Moscow camp. Was it Joe? Is it Joel Rigney? I can't remember. He left Bethlehem to go to Moscow because of the Christian nationalism issue, which led to him being convicted about
Presbyterian theology or something like that.
Pedobaptism specifically. Yeah. So he renounced credo baptism and is like, okay, if, and I think that led to him renouncing credo baptism and adopting a paedo baptist position. So I think Anabaptism is like the worst thing going on for Baptists right now. I also want to bring up John MacArthur. It is fair to bring him up in this conversation because he is very Anabaptist in leanings, but Joe Rigney, not Joel. Okay. Thank you, chat. He doesn't get the L. So anyway, John MacArthur is very pietistic, historically so. This is not someone who has historically believed in Christian intervention in politics. He came out against Operation Rescue back in the late 80s, early 90s. And if you wonder why there's a FACE Act in which there's 9 pro-lifers in jail in federal prison for violating the FACE Act, which is, by the way, a compelling reason to vote for Trump to give those people a pardon. It's because of Operation Rescue, which they were pretty effective in shutting down abortion clinics or, you know, mills, factories, whatever you want to call them. They were very effective in that. And John MacArthur came out against them in the late 80s. And he was holding the cloaks of police officers who would arrest those people. So that's bad. And that's where John MacArthur started. Now, in 2020, he did stand up to the government. John Piper did not do that. David Platt, who I think is a direct disciple of John Piper, did not do that.
I mean, Dace is certainly correct as far as, like, there needs to be a conversation on what the leaders are. There also needs to be a conversation about expectations. And just, you know, actually, like, understanding elite theory and just, you know, getting a little bit more political theology. And you kind of see what were the expectations of Trump, that Trump was going to, like, again, going back to the abolitionists, was that Trump was going to be this champion of abolitionism and basically say he's going to give full equal protection or you won't give him your vote. Is that seriously on the table, even at like a federal level, or just the guy that says no, you know, no federal action on abortion? Like,
so I want to posit this question. So were the Supreme Court justices that were all appointed by Republicans, were they in sin when they answered the Roe v. Wade question? Each one of them, the Democrats are going to ask, hey, what do you think of Roe v. Wade? Are you going to overturn Roe v. Wade? I believe Neil Gorsuch said that if Trump asked him to overturn Roe v. Wade, he would have left the room. So some of them get pretty dramatic about it. But, you know, they give a standard stare decisis answer about when they're asked what their thoughts are on Roe v. Wade. And guess what? You're not, if you were to blurt out, hey, I'm going to overturn Roe v. Wade in your confirmation hearings, you wouldn't get confirmed and you'd be dumb.
But if you give some dodge or give the, I look at the laws as they're written, or I'm an originalist, so I look at the original intent, and stare decisis is binding.
Would that be enough sufficient for a lot of these abolitionists? I don't think the answer is yes. I think they would go after those people for that. So is Trump being a little duplicitous in a way, because, or even treacherous, Because here's the thing. There are examples in scripture where God rewards treachery. It's weird, especially because the Bible's an ancient text. You look at Jehu and how he killed the prophets of Baal. He rounded them up, promised them a party, got them all to one space, and killed them.
Or even, was it Ehud who stabbed the fat guy with the sword and the, you know, walked out? He basically Trojan horse like the Iliad, except more interesting.
Wow. I don't think Brad Pitt approves of that comment. But anyway,
Brad Pitt died in the movie, so. And now, but everyone remembers his name.
So there are times when God rewards that, because Jehu was not a believer, by the way. But God rewarded him in that his fourth generation would still sit on the throne of Israel. So there was a reward for it. It was not a heavenly reward, but it was an earthly good. And the reason why he got punished, or the reason why he wasn't a believer, is because golden calf was okay, but Baal was not. So Trump, I think, could be that Jehu type figure.
But even so, you got to be realistic on what were the expectations of a second Trump term. And I think there's still compelling reasons if you had realistic expectations. I mean, some people do play their hand and they keep it very close to their chest. They don't necessarily flex how powerful they are or what their beliefs truly are. And you see this, like a guy, you know, Arn McIntyre is a good example, because if you look at the people he associates with, he is far more right wing than he might let on, or than he can present himself working at the Blaze. Like, you're not getting the same takes you get on his live stream on the Glenn Beck 9-hour election night stream. He's probably taming himself a little bit for that audience, because you have to weed people into the ideas. You have to actually slowly educate them. You can't spook them. You have to like address them like, you know, like a Fox News viewer, and then kind of just slowly wield it to them. Elon Musk is probably another one where, you know, he keeps his intentions a little bit close, maybe a little bit transparent at times, but, you know, he keeps his hand pretty close. He stays very unpredictable. And obviously he does a very tightrope dance with certain groups of people.
Well, I want to weigh in on this question by Vera Tax. Yeah, I feel like Calvinist theologians and their adherents also go through this sovereign fatalism when deciding whether to vote for anyone at all, which I kind of feel the opposite. Like in 2016, I didn't really want to vote for Trump because of this, a lot of this mentality. I mean, there's also compelling reason to think that Trump would be a Mitt Romney, and Mitt Romney was just a terrible candidate in general. So I've become more Calvinist, and I've actually gone the opposite direction. So I don't, that's, it's not true for me, but I feel like you might be right. But there is also
I don't know
a measure of central tendency bias. I don't know if that's the correct bias to call this, but I feel like majority of relevant figures in evangelicalism are Calvinist. So this is going to be an easier comment to observation to make about Calvinism, because they hold most of the influence in a lot of evangelicalism. Like, even Mark Driscoll is still Tulip. Even if he's not reformed in other ways, he's still Tulip.
I don't know if sovereign fatalism is the term I would use. I mean, obviously, I mean, there's just a lot of, I won't say divisiveness, but like, you know, you can easily light a match and start a fire.
You can see
that all the time, even just on
Joel Webbin getting attacked. And
he's like a magnet for this type of stuff. So that mentality does manifest in a more political realm with a lot of people that have these perfectionists, my way or the highway type ideas, or they're very rigid, but they don't understand that, hey, Trump is just more of a chess piece. He's a pawn to something greater. Now, again, I like the hat simply because it's the most iconic piece of like American political paraphernalia, certainly in my lifetime, but that's what it represents. I mean, Trump is a unique Caesarian figure in American politics.
And I want him to live up to the Caesarian figure. Yes. And the part that he's lived up to, because he hasn't enough, but the part he has lived up to is cheating death and escaping the Kobayashi Maru. He has lived up to that aspect of the Syrian mythos.
I mean, if God spared him that bullet, I mean, even if it's not to save his soul, it could still have benefits for the country overall. And just look at his staffing personnel. So a lot of people, they dislike his first go around with the staffing.
And Trump.
Barron Trump helped him on that campaign.
Oh, but, for sure.
But if you, again, that's the legitimate criticism. Personnel is policy. But look at what he has said. Trump... He has actually presented remorse for his decisions, and he has demonstrated a lot more preparation going into the transition to a second term. And that was very clear on Joe Rogan. If you had no other takeaway on Joe Rogan other than that he had like concerns about staffing, and you know, he clearly has a plan to deal with it. But look at it, who's in his corner. You have Elon Musk, who's the king of competency, who was able to do a lot of things in various industries that no one else could do. You have, obviously, I mean, there are rumors about Thomas Massey being Secretary of Agriculture. You have RFK.
He would crush that role.
I mean, RFK could single-handedly be appointed to like FDA or something and improve the food supply. You know, that thing you eat every day, that food we're supposed to consume every single day for daily bread. Like, he could literally improve that.
He could solve the obesity crisis, at least in children.
Like, that'll affect every single Christian in America. So obviously J.D. Vance is very much aligned with that Elon Musk PayPal mafia type camp. So Elon Musk or J.D. Vance, and again, he's a guy that got into Harvard by merit, not being a legacy, not being a token. He earned his way in.
There is some inspirational or aspirational figures surrounding Trump. Even the more wacky celebrity endorsements that he's brought out, not Kid Rock. Kid Rock sucks. But, you know, Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, just bringing them out in Pennsylvania, I think was actually pretty good. It maybe turned out some low the people that would have a low propensity to vote. So that being said, So we kind of talked on the Calvinism question. Is this a case? Is it the case in an evangelical churches that the clergy are more liberal than the congregation? Yes, I think that is very true, and that's why we need to have the conversation about leadership. And that's why I'm naming John Piper, because a lot of leaders are influenced by him. Desiring God is one of the largest online ministries out there, especially if you don't count Bible apps. There's Got Questions, Desiring God, and then the Gospel Coalition. They are larger than the Gospel Coalition. And yet, John Piper can talk about how gambling is a sin, even though there's no proof text in all of Scripture, and the idea of casting lots to determine the fate of God is actually kind of gambling. And then he can talk about how role-playing in the bedroom with your wife is a sin, but somehow voting Democrat is a complicated issue.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's too old to give, like, advice on what is or is not acceptable.
Or somehow if someone is trying... If someone is trying to forcibly, you know, YouTube speak, grape your wife... You won't use lethal force to defend her? That's Anabaptism, by the way. That is a clear Anabaptist non-violence pacifist that's often associated with the Amish and the Mennonites and stuff like that. John Piper believes that hardcore, but he has a broader mainstream appeal because he's a more mainstream flavor of Anabaptism.
Now, keep in mind, the flip side is that you had previously liberal people that are like kind of signaling or riding that wave, that you see that with like Josh Howerton following behind that Mark Driscoll footsteps and having a couple viral clips. You have, I think even Owen Strand was kind of like, you know, joining the winning team.
Yeah, we can talk about that in a second, or not in a second, but we can get to that for sure. I mean, the Big Even meltdowns are quite hilarious, and maybe we can get into that. I don't know if you want to listen to Russell Moore speak, or maybe that should be a separate video on its own. But it's just incredible. You got David French, who's very much hurt by the situation. I want to play this by Mark Driscoll. He's having some fun. So I want to share this thing that he posted because it also involves John MacArthur. So it's He was trolling, and I'm actually here for that because I thought this was hilarious.
There's some interesting articles in the last couple of days on the relationship between Mark Driscoll and Donald Trump. Have you seen those? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that the evangelical interest in Donald Trump, the way has been prepared by Mark Driscoll for that.
So what I believe you were trying to say is thank you.
Thank you?
You're welcome.
There's some interesting...
Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it was good delivery. I'll give him that. I mean, Mark Driscoll certainly has that, like, I will say naturally brash personality, which I guess...
He has a talent.
...is Trumpian in a sense.
Like, I don't think David Platt's talented as an orator or in any way. I don't get the appeal of David Platt. I don't get the appeal of John Piper. I think Christian hedonism is terrible. And yeah, not being able to tie your shoes, but having all these degrees theologically is just...
Yeah. I mean, I get why people like Driscoll. I'm not necessarily a fan of his...
I like Driscoll. I think he's very flawed, but the dude is cooking.
And I think that's why people I'll like let him cook. He actually talks about relevant issues.
Exactly.
But, you know, like even when we looked at the Matt Chandler video where, you know, he goes this whole sermon and then he's kind of just still third weighing it, even though I think he actually correctly articulates a lot of things about, you know, the nature of the Dominion mandate, even if it's not like perfect, but, you know, he almost kind of sounded like Stephen Wolf, even though, you know, Stephen Wolf might have disagreed with that was because he did a video on that sermon. But yeah, towards the end, he's just like, well, you know, both sides are bad and, you know, I'm not really going to give you a solid advice going into the election, you know, thrones and thorns.
And let me know in the chat, you know, what you were hearing on the Sunday before election.
Now, let me just say it. All three pastors at my church, they all mentioned the election. Then you had the Sunday school teacher also did it too. So, you know, four up, four down as far as mentioning the election prior to the election day. So my church did its job.
Okay. That's good to hear. I'm having trouble with my bookmarks on Twitter at the moment because they're not in the reverse chronological order of when I added them. They're in some random order. So I'm having trouble. So let's talk about Owen Strand. No, that's not where Owen Strand is. So let's talk about the Owen Strand thing, because the leadership thing is very important. I think Mark Driscoll's house is going to increase because he's putting in the work. He's taking stands that people with better theology are not taking. And because he's actually taking risk, he will be rewarded, because there are the universal laws of risk and reward that I think are woven into the creation. I think God rewards risk and rewards risk with reward if the risk was well taken. So with Mark Driscoll basically getting canceled and coming back, let's talk about Owen Strand, who wants to tag along afterwards. So Owen Strand, and he's blocked me, so I use a screenshot, by the way, because Twitter X now allows screenshot. You can now see people who have blocked you, and I love that as someone who's made a lot of enemies on here. God willing, we may see a new Christian political movement arise. We have been fractured for too long. We have let the left splice us up into tribes. No longer. We need a new movement. We need to consolidate and build. And hear me clearly, the unborn must be at the center.
So that's the before, right? Is this, no, is this like a before and after? Because afterwards, he did like a celebratory pro-Trump tweet. But yeah, he's kind of just, this is almost like a third way, except instead of a third way, we need a new way. You know, one might say a new path forward wherever.
And my point was, how many podcasts and lectures did you do against Christian nationalism again? Get to the back of the line. And I'm being very clear, he should have no part in it. And I came up with this line that it needs to go viral. I didn't leave the woke left me. We need to just troll people like this with that. J.D. Greer's another one who's, you know, trying to say, hey, I was on. Good job, Trump. It's always losers who call for unity. It's a trick. That is somewhat true. I want to call for unity as a troll.
No, I'm because the guy.
Because of 2021, that like there was all these calls for unity and vague calls for unity, and I think we should just do the same thing as a trick, or as a troll, not a trick.
No, I'm doing a lot of trolling lately, especially in like, you know, seeing all these liberals and then, you know, just responding to them in the election, give them a little Trump dancing meme or, you know,
so yelling. There's a lot to go on here after, since we're now past the election, you're going to see a lot more movement with the Christian nationalism, just more formalities. Cause again, we didn't want to do anything. And I say collectively we, because this is definitely true for me. And I believe this is also true for, the people who made the statement on Christian nationalism. They posted their final draft, which I did see some market improvements in some of the areas that we had criticism of. Like, they cleaned up the war section a lot. So, you know, territorial expansion is now back on the menu. And holy wars being denounced is off the menu. So
I hope it was because
holy wars and expansion wars are back on the menu. And I like
I hope they did that because they read my criticism. So maybe I'll take a victory lap on that.
Yeah. Yes. Grayson BR. I want to say Gray Sun Bear, but that's not right. Said, you know, CN social gospel style, because they had the whole font, because they used a stylistically similar font to the statement on social justice and the gospel, which was made in part by the G3 guys, who are vehemently anti-Christian nationalism and also vehemently anti being relevant, because what are they trying to do a month before the election is talk about cessationism?
And let me just say that the G3 guys, you know,
Virgil Walker, needs to be brought up.
Countersignaled a Nebraska pro-life amendment, which narrowly passed with, I think, 53-54%. So it did succeed. But he countersignaled that. But at the beginning of the night, when like 50% of the vote was counted, the abortion rights amendment actually was ahead in the polls. So what would have happened was the downside risk to Virgil
Walker. So can I pause you right there? Yeah, there were two competing amendments.
Yes, this is
one of them was a pro-life amendment. One of them was a pro-abortion amendment. Though because the amendments conflicted, the one with the higher percentage or more votes, I'm not sure which one, what was the tiebreaker, was going to win.
Yes, so they both could get above 50% threshold, which was what was happening as the early on in the night. So you had people that voted for both amendments, or maybe they skip one. I don't know. And so that's the scenario Virgil Walker was just totally ignorant of, despite living in the state of Nebraska. And he advocated that you vote no on both so that they both fail to meet the 50% threshold. Because, you know, it's legislating immorality and it's legislating the current law, which is like a 6-week or 12-week ban or something like that, into the Constitution of Nebraska. And yeah, though the pro-life amendment succeeded at the beginning of the night, it looked like it was going to fail, and then you would have enshrined abortion. It's just like that, and you had actual church members, like prominent church figures, you know, who influence other pastors counter-signaling that pro-life amendment. And then but even still, it only passes with like 53-54% or whatever the percent was. You needed that thing closer to 60. So to really have a mandate to pass further abortion. Anti-abortion legislation in Nebraska.
So that, again, there are certain people that really can't be a part of the conversation, in my opinion, or leading the conversation. I think this has to be a layman-led effort for the most part. And I know the people on the statement of social justice, people on the Christian nationalism and the gospel statement, they waited until after the election because they didn't want to cause a distraction for Trump. I'm waiting until after
the election.
I don't want to cause a distraction, and I don't have the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, but they dropped the day after, which just makes no sense from a, I guess, a.
Well, I think it makes sense from a, hey, we waited until it was prudent to do so, and yeah, we did it.
I don't know. We're still relishing in the victory. And we still need to really do our post-game analysis as well.
We can do the
review game film.
We can do the review of the game film, but I did want to let me bring up this let's start off reviewing the game film right here. The top three demographics that voted against Trump: Black women, 91%, Jewish women, 88%, and the gays, 86%.
Again, up 10% with the gays.
I don't know how true this is, but this is like a gay dude that posted this. So I think it's actually okay. It seems to be from the exit polls that I've been looking at. And yeah, 86%. The gay vote went Kamala. That is surprising.
In the upcoming article I have, I wrote that like the Democrats are the party of like literal gay race Bolshevism. That is their party.
Let's get into the game film, so to speak, of the election with the exit polls. We see overall men 55% for Trump to 42%. Men are more likely to vote third party, and I think you'll see that in like all the breakdowns. Women 53% Kamala to 45% Trump, but you see white people 57% Trump. That carried that was the carrying of the group team of the group project, obviously, and then 54% for other, which, you know, Native Americans are apparently based outside of Arizona, I guess. Actually, it must be Oklahoma carrying that stat. We got his, because Oklahoma does not have a single county that went for Kamala, and they haven't had a single county that's gone for a Democrat since like in recent memory. Like even Obama didn't win a single county in Oklahoma, according to Tom Buck. And I'll trust his history lesson there. So Hispanics is going to be one of the more interesting to break down when we get to it. But when they do, was American Indian, when they include that, it's 65%, which is actually more than white men, or more than whites.
Probably a lot in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm saying Oklahoma's carrying the team here. Maybe some of those other middle of the country states. So whites versus non-whites, so 57%, which we already knew about, but it drops down to 33% for non-whites. So that is huge. Now we get the sex by race. 60% white men. 60% for Trump. Huge. So all this pandering to white men that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz did only got 37%. They had a masculinity crisis and they felt it.
And they did all these like fake gestures. You know, Kamala sipped a beer at a bar. You had Tim Walz basically with AOC, who's pretending to be like a gamer girl, and people are speculating whether she was like pregnant or not. And you know, they're trying to do like a Twitch stream to appeal to people. And then their male influencer class is Harry Sisson, who looked like a twink in most of his
looks like one.
Yeah. Yeah. And his pictures looked like he was literally on like a date with another man.
But
black men, it's only like, you know, a 2-point difference from 2020.
Let's talk about white women. Where are the white women at? The white women voted Trump 53% to 45%.
But that's maintaining. Like that's Trump holding strong with white women.
Hey, that's good in this day and age that he could hold those.
He held that. He held
that. That's an impressive line that he held. I will say, I bet it ain't 53% voting pro-life, though. Willing to bet that one. Black men, a lot of hype about the brothers be flipping, and 21%. Okay. Now, here's the thing about the black male vote. It is very stratified. Trump got the black men where he needed to get the black men. That was, you know, Pennsylvania, Georgia. He did really well with black men in Texas. And I don't know about Michigan and Wisconsin, but he did well with black men where he needed to do well.
I'm sure he didn't do well with the black men in Milwaukee and in Michigan that had very high rates of mail-in ballot return rate. I'm sure he didn't do pie with those black men.
Yeah, probably not the ones that had like women fill out their ballots for them. Because black women, let's talk about that. 91% to 7 in favor of Kamala. Like, you do not get more groupthink than that, or block voting, I should say, not groupthink, because
that is good. The single-handed most liberal category. I mean, you have to, like, Trump could say a hard, like, how do you do worse than like 7% with, like, do you have to say a hard R to do worse?
They give Jews a run for their money. So Latino men, 55% for Trump.
That is the story.
That's huge.
Those Hispanic men by 20% improvement. It was 36 in 2020, up to 55. And that had a pull effect on the women. Yes.
But in some areas, it was really good. And I think in like Texas and Florida, he did really well with black men or Hispanic men. But in California, it was turd in the punch bowl, relatively speaking. But it polling a majority of Latino men, pretty good. Now, here's where things aren't very good. Only 6% of the electorate. I think that's kind of low. That's low turnout. Now, I'm not saying the stat's wrong, but this is a base that's technically larger than blacks in the country, and they're showing up at the same rate. So I don't know what it is about Hispanics voting or not voting.
Hispanic women were pulled up 8%. So if you market to men,
You bring women.
20% women. You improved with Hispanic men by 20%, and then you, because you did that, you improved with Hispanic women by 8%. There's a push-pull effect or a drag-along effect.
I mean, white evangelicals helped carry this race for Trump, because statistically we did. Trump could not win without the white evangelicals breaking at 81%, which we're going to get into. I think it's 82% according to CBS. We helped him win because we vote and then our wives vote for us. So we get two votes in that respect. Latina women, the Latinas voted 38% for Trump to 60. And then all other races is 48 to 46.
I'm guessing that's where a lot of Arabs,
Asians,
and third party that's in that little block.
So let's talk about the age breakdown. We mentioned earlier that 54% that Gen X was the one that carried the team here at 54%. This isn't perfect in its breakdown of the generations, because you know I'm under 30, but I'm still a millennial.
The lower age one is a little bit more.
The youth vote 43% to 54%. Yes. That is,
and again, that's also driven by men.
That's pretty bad for the Democrats.
Yeah, I think it's 49% of like men under 30 voted Trump in this election. So who's weighing me. Go down to the third age bracket.
So
42%, the 18 to 24, those are Zoomers.
Yes.
42% up from 31% or 31 or 32%. So that's about a 10-11 point improvement just in one cycle.
A major improvement.
That's the effect of going on those podcasts, of doing Joe Rogan.
Bro whispering.
Yes. That's the Barron Trump effect right there.
And as you get older, it gets more and more right wing until you get to the boomers, where he dips down to 49%. So once you're above 40, 40 to 64, you're in Trump plus territory, which is the largest part of the electorate, except for the boomers at 65 and over, which comprised 28% of the electorate that voted 49%. For Kamala, and it's 49-49. So she didn't decisively win that. But again, Trump was trending upward with age until that generation. Age by gender is where we're really going to want to see. 18 to 29, 49 to 47 in favor of Trump. A lot of third party votes going to be in that because of idealistic people. Again, been there, done that. I never voted third party though. Although if you saw in Maryland, a lot of the very red counties voted third, like the Libertarian candidate for Senate was carrying 7% in like some of these counties. Washington County, Allegheny County, and some places on the Eastern Shore. deep red places in Maryland that aren't very populated. This libertarian dude is pulling 7%. He was too degenerate for me, too open borders for me, so I wasn't going to bite. But, you know, good on him for that. Was a real protest vote, even though Hogan outperforms your generic Republican. Let's see. And then when you get men 30 to 44, 53%, men 45 to 64, 60%, men 65 and older. So old men voted still 55%, but it is down from.
Now, I don't believe they had this chart. They did not have this chart in their 2020. So I don't know what the comparisons are, but I do know the unmarried woman was down 2%. So there is maybe a slight improvement. Maybe that's just because you have more like base Zoomer girls that are coming of age and they're hitting that demographic. And maybe you have millennials graduating into the next age bracket, and but I don't know.
Women, it's Trump still improves with age with women again until you get to the 65 and older crowd, where it's 54 to 45% in favor of Kamala. And then, but overall, like, he wins the Gen X women as well. So he wins 50 to 49, very split majority, but he loses 30 to 44 year old. So he loses the generically millennial woman, 54 to 43. That's pretty bad. And then he loses the Zoomer women, 61 to 37.
But again, that chart details a lot of the bifurcation on gender, as yeah, well as just
by, you know, race,
as well as the masculinity crisis,
but young white,
or the marriage crisis, I should say.
Young whites tied at 49%. So that's male and female tied at 49%.
Yeah, so that's going to be a very contentious breakdown as far
those
as
are the frat bros that voted for Trump. And I'm included in that too. So part of that 49% in favor on the good side there. But and then as soon it only goes up from there for whites until you, again, you get to the boomers and it's less conservative. So it peaks at 62% with the Gen X whites. So that's huge. The white dudes for Harris messaging did not strike or score at all. Blacks stayed 15% for Trump.
Yeah, that's across all age brackets.
Across the age brackets until you get very old, above 65%, 65 in age. Then he dips down to 5% support. But solid support there at 15% across the age brackets up until 64 years old.
So that would kind of show you you're not necessarily appealing more or less to like younger versus older blacks. It's just, you know, whether you have the right person.
Latino is also similarly stable.
Yeah.
You know, he's averaging 47% across the, and then until he gets to the old and it drops down to 41%. And then all others is 46 to 48% in favor of Kamala. So college educated, I think Trump did not improve with never attended college. That was one of the areas he didn't improve.
Yeah, I didn't quite compare to all these.
It's a less important stat in my mind. Because at the end of the day, gender is the biggest.
Yeah, gender and race are the
gender,
two biggest
race, drivers. And religion are the three biggest drivers in general.
And what you're seeing in this cycle is that Hispanics are now a swing vote on the table.
And even white people are waking up.
And yeah, I mean, or at least it's that stable, but certainly the youth are, the youth gone wild is what I write is, the youth have gone wild.
Oh, you got an article on this coming?
Yes, yes.
You sign up for the newsletter so you don't miss it. There's your plug. So let's see. I want to see college educated women. White women college graduates 57 to 41 in favor of Kamala. But Trump wins white men with or without college degrees. So nice job, Trump there.
So again, that's that 18 to 29 bracket.
Let's see. Income, the rich tended to go for Kamala until you get super poor. Not shocking.
Yeah, a lot of those.
Okay, let's get to California. labor union broken was pretty close.
Yeah, but I mean, this union counts as a labor union, so that's actually very good if you consider that certain public unions and teachers' unions are everywhere, versus like an auto union, which is situated mainly in like Michigan. And
so let's talk about the religious vote. Protestant, 63% to 36%. This includes mainline.
That's about a 5%. That's about a 5% increase, I think.
Maybe
that was 3%.
I don't think this includes Mormons, but it might, which it shouldn't. But Mormons also aren't electorally significant outside of three states, just being real. Catholics, 58% to 40%. That is huge for Trump. That is a huge 18 point.
So he improved. So 63% is up from 58. So that's about a 3%. That's a, it's what?
How was that? Your mic is cutting out.
He's up 3% with the Protestants. He's up 11% with the Papists.
11%
yes.
With the Papists, 3% with the Protestants.
That's that Hispanic vote that really moves the needle. 11% with the Papists.
So let's talk about the Jews. 2% of the electorate. And they don't vote third party, as you can see. 78% to 22% in favor of Kamala. They are the reverse lone bulwark. They're not going to get a more solid demographic than that. They are even more liberal than the atheist at 71% to 26%, who comprise 24% of the electorate. That's pretty concerning. And then something else, I don't know what's included in something else, but it's 10% of the electorate. Religion among white voters. So white Protestants were at 72%. Again, that includes mainliners. Jews now count as white for this, I guess, but it jumps up to 80%, I guess. White evangelicals, this is where you get the 22% of the electorate from, but they voted 82% in favor of Trump.
I mean, Stephen Wolf.
I guess it was 81% according to CBS.
Stephen Wolf is vindicated yet again.
Yes, he got a lot of crap for that. But you see these numbers individually. Trump cannot win without this. He cannot win. This 82% makes up for this 40%.
And that 40% was also an improvement, strangely enough.
Because 82% of 22% makes up for, the 40% being short.
17, 18%.
So having children, 53% to 44%. That's a huge gap. Huge gap that in favor of Trump. And not having kids gave you a narrow gap in favor of the Kamala. So parents voted for Trump.
Yes.
Except for single
moms. And then
you
see men with children.
Women with children was 51% to 46%. So the single mom vote, the baby mamas did not turn out for Trump as well.
So marriage was one of the biggest ones that I noticed. So again, married. Again, Trump did held strong with married women. So he was 51% was roughly even with his 2020, but he improved 5% amongst married men.
Huge.
So that is a major improvement in just getting more married men to vote.
Okay, let's talk about the gays. We saw the 86% earlier to 13%, and then not gay was 53% to 45%. So that is the least surprising result on here other than the Jewish thing, right?
I mean, I'm surprised that the Jewish thing
and the lone bulwark. We're gonna give an evangelical some love here. The lone bulwark being 82% is fantastic. Good job, excellent. Good job, church. I do want to make a broader point about that because there's a lot of talk about election season being divisive in the church. No, the church was pretty united. We were very united on this election. 82%. We were pretty united. Don't let the pastors talk about dividing the church.
It's the pastors that are introducing division by saying that you can go both ways.
Or that there is division fine. When there actually isn't division. 82%. The biggest division in the church is whether to vote or not. Not whether to vote for Trump or Kamala. The church was quite united on the Trump if they voted. Veterans, 65 to 34%. Not very surprising. First year you ever voted, new voters, Trump won new voters and old voters. But he racked up some margins on new voters, which was 8% of the electorate. Condition of the economy, again, if you thought the economy was good, why are you voting Republican? Like, who are these 10%?
Yeah, some of these questions Trump? Towards the bottom I thought were a little strangely worded. List these five things and which one is most important to you.
So the people that voted for the economy or the people that said the economy sucks, they obviously voted Trump. And I don't know how you can look at the economy and say it's good. How do you feel about the way things are going in the country today? Enthusiastic, 89% for Kamala. Which issues matter the most? Foreign policy. Apparently Trump won that vote, which I guess it has to do with keeping the country out of wars. So Trump won those people. And then
voted with Kamala. Not a large bracket, though.
4%. But I imagine the people that think nuclear war is the biggest issue are going to go with the Trump. Abortion. Yeah, it was a losing issue. And I don't mean that we shouldn't be pro-life, but if you can't win on the issue, pretend like it doesn't exist until you get in. And that's Trump should have done. And that's why his messaging was terrible, because he kept talking about it.
I mean, in his defense, it kept being brought up, and since the Democrats were going to bring it up at every opportunity and every debate, you're going to have some kind of question about abortion. So it's kind of like an unavoidable, I won't say landmine, but if you're storming, the beaches and you're taking shellfire.
The state of democracy is viewed as the largest issue. And that was 34% said the state of democracy, whatever that means. And that went 80% Kamala. Whereas you can see that the Republican issues being the economy and immigration and even foreign policy.
I don't.
32% said the economy, 34% said state of democracy. You hate to see that.
So it just shows you what the Democrats were running on was basically January 6th and abortion.
Apparently, Democrats also think that Kamala has good judgment.
I guess she knew how to, navigate into office. She knew which men to spot and to help out.
Now, the Israel question is interesting. 30%. There's no way that was 30% of Republicans saying that the U.S. support for Israel was too strong in 2020. I think that is a major jump if we were to retroactively poll that.
And perhaps that does reflect a change in what the Republican, because again, you had a lot of people that say not strong enough. So I'm not sure what the percent was, but I think there is going to be a generational division in there that's just not necessarily reflected in this polling data just yet.
Man, is there a question about mass deportations?
there actually might be, because you'll see that Democrats want more amnesty somewhere in the poll. So most Democrats are saying that there should be some amnesty versus Republicans who want mass deportations.
I'm not saying it. So I guess that's all we got for today. He got the white suburban women, which is off talk about for 6 years now. 53% he won them. So I think collectively we owe white women. We got to give white women some credit here. They did their part.
hey, look, white women are the best type of women. And, you know, that might get a lot of ire from, like, the people that are so against, you know.
Hey, if a black man said that he's attracted to black women, I would have no offense at that.
I'm not just talking about in politics, but also in dating. White women are the best women. Speaking for myself.
Well, I married a white woman, so I guess I'm not white supremacist enough because, you know, they all have like Asian girlfriends.
JD Vance got
JD Vance, yeah, he got Indian. And she's pretty for sure. That being said, questions, what else do we want to talk about tonight? Let's give some. Oh, we did get a super chat. Let me talk about that. The Bishop of Railway for $5 Canadian. How based is Moscow being this November?
Not, I mean,
I'm deliberately not paying attention.
I mean, let's be real. You know, back in during COVID, you know, the Moscow mood was really like elevated. You know, they're actually standing for something. They were actually getting things done on the ground level. And, you know, as when Harvey Dent says you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. I mean, the Moscow mood lived long enough to become a LARP.
I don't know if it's a complete LARP, but I'm not going to pay attention to No Quarter November. I'm just not going to give it much. I'm not going to give the fire much to breathe.
Yeah. I mean, you spent all your months bashing White Boy Summer which is like, you know, if you want to talk about the biggest plank in your own eye, condemning White Boy Summer with your No Quarter November. I mean, and it just makes no sense. You're going against the energy of the culture. You're basically chastising the potential male like demographic that you should most naturally appeal to. Like if you're talking about church evangelism, I mean, we go back to Driscoll. Part of Driscoll's success is that he appeals to men. And that's like also a driving force. And you have all these pastors, the Platts, the Chandlers, the so forth, the Pipers that appeal to a lot of women. And so the feminization of the church is a failing strategy. But if you actually had a more masculine approach to evangelism, a more masculine approach to ministry, that you see that with Driscoll being rewarded, but you also see that being the most fertile ground.
Yeah. Here's what the statistics will show you. I'm trying to remember what the cutoff year is. I believe it's 1995. So people born 1995 onward, men are more likely to be in church than women from 1995 onward, birth year. Before that, it's women more likely to be in church than men. That is a huge shift. So someone's going to appeal to that. And I think Mark Driscoll, again, he's cooking. So I say let him cook. I like what I'm seeing out of him, even though he's not perfect, even though I disagree with him on some theological issues. I'm not going to counter signal when he's actually taking bold stances that pastors with better theology should have been taking this entire time.
I mean, I haven't written it yet, but that would be my advice to the, you know, the abolitionist camp, the pro-life camp. How do you turn the ship around? You're taking L after L. You lost in Missouri, right? Of all states that, you know, the show me state, you lost there. I mean, obviously
that is a failure of, I want to say Southern Baptist.
But I mean, yeah, you go back to Dace's conversation about the church and you have a long conversation. The church turnout should have been a driving force in Missouri of all states. But yeah, the red pill, that Manosphere community, that's the community the pro-life industry or pro-life movement needs to actually be making inroads to. Stop leading with women, start leading with men, get on like the whatever podcast and talk pro-life, convince that younger generation. Like, because you'll have the men on board. I mean, you already saw a sizable shift to the right with men.
And now, I don't know if we did an entire live stream on the Nala Ray girl, right?
Yes.
And then she's back on the whatever podcast claiming that Jesus isn't God.
Yeah, she doesn't understand Trinity, which again, and she's baffles worse, like, me considering she was raised in the church.
That she's like, Rita, what Bible are you reading? It's like, how on earth do you read the New Testament and not come away with Jesus saying that he is God? It's like all over the place. Anytime he preaches with authority that they are amazed by, it's because he's preaching as God. They're not just, oh, he's a really good speaker. That's not why they're amazed. That's not why they've never heard anyone teach like Jesus has taught before. It's because Jesus is teaching and preaching with the authority of God. It's that level of I am God that they are not used to hearing. Yes. Because they are used to hearing, you have heard it. I say to you this. You have heard it said this. I say to you this. They're used to more of that type of dialogue, which Jesus does also use. And then Colonial Moonwalker says, and I think we brought this up earlier, Blair White's about to pull a Nella Ray. It's like, yeah, I don't know if you saw.
I saw you comment on that.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, count the cost. He needs to count the cost. And it's worth it.
But I mean, yeah, it does show
it's
that.
It's going to require a lot of repentance and very noticeable repentance.
I mean, again, you see a lot of these high profile. How many of them are really taking the time to do more discipleship, to be ministered and mentored? And obviously, I don't think Nala has good influences in her life regarding Christianity.
I think
her husband's kind of a little bit of a fruitcake. And I don't mean like a gay way, but just he's out there. Married her. So I guess, yeah, that's kind of out there. But
yeah, a little bit.
Same thing with Russell Brand and some of these other guys.
Russell Brand, I at least believe is genuine, even though he's extremely flawed. I think I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Kanye, he's more convincing than Kanye, who it's like, I want to believe. And I really want to believe, but I'm struggling. And then once Kanye, the whole Balenciaga thing, that's when Kanye sold out. He did not want to denounce the fashion industry. And that's a strange, like, you counted the cost and you thought the fashion industry was worth giving up God for? The fashion industry?
Yeah, pro-life people, if you're watching this, that's your path. Appeal to the younger men. And again, there is a libertarian to like hard right pipeline that you got. Everyone does need to understand that this is a transformation. It is a process that even with like a lot of people lament that Trump made the conservative movement or the Republican Party more liberal. I really reject that because I think you had a wave that was going to happen regardless of whether Trump. And if anything, Trump actually slowed that wave down by winning in 2016. Because again, I don't think Cruz cracks the Rust Belt, and that means the Republicans lose in 16. Hillary's president.
I think Cruz still wins, but the electoral. But I think he flips a state like Nevada, and doesn't take that, 8 years to do it. That Trump.
I don't think that. I don't think that would have done it because he would. I don't think he gets Virginia. That was the path. He would have needed Virginia to.
I mean, I think anyone but a Nikki Haley type would have won this election. Because Kamala's that bad, and so was Joe Biden.
Well, I'm talking about 2016.
I'm just bringing it back to now. It's like, I don't think Trump was uniquely able to win now. But let's be real. People like Nikki Haley were uniquely able to lose in this election cycle.
But my point is that you had a movement that was happening regardless, because that's just where the Con Inc. and the Zionist that rule Con Inc. were trending. Right. But that as that younger generation's coming to age, a lot of them are going from like a neoconservative to libertarian to like now they're coming out more paleocon on the other side. That's a transformation. It takes time. And that trend should be improving in the next 4 years. So the Republican Party could actually reverse course on a lot of social issues, as you're seeing with support for gay marriage going down, trending downward. So you have positive tailwinds on your side.
And remember, we drive the change. The politicians react to it.
Like, meme culture is incredibly right-wing. That, and again, it helped Trump get into the White House with talking about the Haitians. I mean, the fact that Trump's literally doing, they're eating the cats and dogs.
They're eating the cats. They're eating the dogs.
So, yeah, him doing that, he's reacting to meme culture. Our influencer network, contrary to what these big Eva types were saying about you and Nons have no influence. No, they do.
And they are going to JD Vance especially is an example of he's very interested in the online right-wing space.
And I think there is a chance.
And so is Barron.
That the younger guys are able to make the Republican Party more right-wing. Because once they come out of that libertarian bent.
They're going to be so based.
They're good.
They're going to be so based. We are going to turn your son's base and there's nothing you can do to stop us.
So yeah, COVID broke a lot of people's priors in terms of their political thoughts. So
2022 election did that because there should have been a reaction for COVID and then there wasn't. And I'll say this about Trump. He failed in 2022. He should have been more on the ground helping candidates out. He did not. If you want to run for president in 2024, act like it and be the leader that you needed to be during that midterm election cycle. And he just wasn't. And that's why I was very skeptical about Trump in 2024, because he wasn't being that leader. But he has since emerged. He has actually made some course corrections, even on the abortion thing. He at least did the bare minimum to support the pro-life side of the Amendment 4. So he did the bare minimum in opposing Amendment 4 in Florida, which, yes, it took some clarification to get him there, but he did react to the broader criticism that he received for waffling on that issue. We got to reward that to some extent. So those are my thoughts. Any questions coming in?
Yeah, be optimistic. Again, a couple articles on the pipeline. I'll eventually write the pro-life abortion analysis on how to, going through that young men. And that'll probably be a lot more fun than standing outside.
Oh, so you got me. They did a live stream attacking me for the article you wrote. You got any thoughts on that? I don't know if you watched it.
I did not. I saw the clip and, they're arguing over whether, the Bible is extreme, which, I'm saying extreme in like the political vernacular extreme, not like, and that's not even saying
a moral judgment on whether
I'm not saying extreme is bad. I'm not even saying extreme is bad, but yeah,
took it that way.
They needed an hour to, I guess, redress a 2,000 word article.
Those 2,000 words.
Yeah, I actually cut that article down. I cut a lot of punches out of that article.
Oh, wait, what? No, I wanted to pull this one. Stormy Squad 1 says no more brother wars means ignore people making war. Yeah, I think that's
true. I mean, to some extent, yes. That's why, I'm not going to take the bait. The most important issue right now was the election, but you have a lot of people attacking Joel Webin in the week leading up to an election, which makes no sense.
Nobody Special says John Piper turned into a nut job. I think fame went to his head. I think that's true. Some guy says Martin MLK Jr. thought extreme was good.
Oh, thank you.
What would they think of that?
Thank you for bringing this up. Guess what day of the year is the Trump inauguration?
Oh,
MLK
man.
Day, January 20th, MLK Day. That is call it Trump Day. The post-war consensus is taking a major L.
We are going to co-opt it for Trump.
Yes, we have co-opted. We are co-opting Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
For Trump and also for God in this case, because MLK is an idol that needs to be smashed because he was a heretic.
You heard it here first if you didn't hear it already.
I wanted to share this tweet. Son of Japheth, which he got a shout out on AD Robles lately. He says, Christian men, this is the time to build. God has granted us this window of opportunity to retake our culture and our land. Let us not squander it. We may never get another opportunity like this in our lifetimes. Start a business, plant a church, write a book, run for office, launch a podcast, start family worship at home, lead a Bible study. Man, I gotta say, first of all, I've done some of those things. I'd like to highlight the fact that I've written a book as well, Winning Not Winsome, 10 Commandments of Spiritual Warfare. What's pretty interesting about the book, I'll plug the book, but then I'll get into more reacting to the thing. Actually, let me finish what he said. So he says, may all that we do take every thought captive to obey Christ, citing 2 Corinthians 10:5, build, create, grow, establish. So I want to talk about the book, because what's interesting about Winning Not Winsome is I go after John Piper, perhaps one of the most. I don't really talk about Tim Keller as much. I talk about John Piper for being woke, because John Piper is extremely woke, by the way. And I bring the receipts in. It's his own words. It's his own writing. And I've done videos and articles on this, but I talk about him winning, not win some. So it's relevant to the live stream as well. So I've written a book. I have run for office before. I've not planted a church, and I don't want to plant a church. I'll just be real about that one. And I've started a business or two or however many I've actually started. When Evangelical Dark Web is technically a business. And then I plan to launch another business this month. I'm not going to talk about that on this stream, but big things are happening. Big things are happening, and this is the opportunity to do it. I was in the back of my head. I am banking on Trump winning with these plans that I've been making. So that's part of the reason why I wanted to vote for Trump, because I need more, I want more money so I can do more good with it.
I mean, I certainly took advantage of the election betting that Robinhood issued. I bought a couple contracts.
I don't like Polymarket though, because they play.
No, games. Robinhood did options trading on Trump.
They did, but it was also based on Polymarket.
Yeah. Well, I cashed out.
I think it was an API. I'm not going to cash out at 97. I want that 99.
No, I didn't cash out yet, but I made bank.
Yeah, I didn't make. I actually placed a bet on Trump. I got like -165 odds for him, so I got those odds on Trump, and that's probably where I got the most.
This
return.
Question came up. I don't think we addressed it. So I heard someone say that. Well, again, the question is: will the Jew turn out for Kamala in this election? Shake the Trump administration from simping for Israel. Now, again, we already kind of mentioned that, you know, he's not exactly buddy buddy with Netanyahu, which, again, you know, if you're wanting an anti-Zionist administration, I mean, being anti-Netanyahu is like the next best thing, and you should be very grateful for.
Yeah, they got beef. He was
so. But the other thing is, if we're just looking at a staffing standpoint, and I noticed, like, again, a lot of people said in his speech he didn't necessarily, you know, he maybe gave more of a generic, you know, thanks to God or God bless, but he didn't necessarily like praise a lot. He didn't praise the
he didn't give the group. Oscar speech.
He didn't give the Oscar speech in which he praised certain groups of people. So I do think, you know, he's probably not going to have as many as, you know, Joe Biden did in his administration. And again, I think a lot of the people he's already signaled to staffing are more disinclined to be friendly with the Israelis. So like Elon Musk and even RFK is not necessarily one of their, he's not really a friend to them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, the staffing decisions. I think that's, unless we got any more questions coming in, but otherwise, if you like this kind of content, do also subscribe to the channel, to the podcast. If you are new subs help with the channel's growth the most. That's what every YouTube algorithm will show you. And also check out evangelicaldarkweb.org/join. All this is linked in the description below. That's our patron-like system. Have a blessed day. Stay based, Crisis King, and we will catch you on the next one.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.